Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Responding to Evil.
Hello. I've received more letters in response to last week's broadcast than I have to any three other broadcasts, and I'm very gratified. I expected that some of our Ukrainian and Russian listeners would respond well to what I said last week about the horrible fate of so many of their young women, but I was especially pleased by the responses I have received from some of our non-Slavic listeners, who are as angry as the Slavs themselves at what the Jews are doing to Slavic women, and who have expressed their determination to fight this evil with all their means. I should tell you that I've also received three or four hostile letters in response to last week's program. The most significant of these is from a Christian who condemns me for being critical of the Jews in this matter. He doesn't come right out and say that he believes that it's all right for Jews to enslave Gentile girls, but he implies that. He says that Jews are God's chosen people, and whatever they do is God's will. It says so right in the Bible. Another Christian writes that he doesn't believe there ever was such an article in the New York Times as the one I cited from the January 11th issue. He thinks I made it all up because he knows that Jews aren't bad people. They wouldn't do the things I accuse them of doing or the things they themselves confess to in the New York Times. I wonder what this fellow would do if someone grabbed him, put a pistol to his head, sat him down and made him read the January 11th New York Times article on the white slave trade. I suspect he still wouldn't believe it, because it doesn't agree with what he learned in Sunday school or saw on TV. But really, the problem we face in fighting the evil of white slavery is not idiots like these who are filled with superstitious nonsense or who simply refuse to believe whatever they don't want to believe. The real problem is the people who understand what's happening, who care about it like I do, but who won't do anything about it. I hate to say this, but I'm afraid that some of the people who sent me nice letters saying how much they agree with me fall into this problem category. I've talked with you on earlier programs about this problem of the spectator mentality, about the tendency to respond to the real world in the same way we respond to a television drama. We watch it, we talk about it, but we feel no overwhelming compulsion to do anything about it because at some level of consciousness, it's not real to us. We feel that it doesn't actually concern us or threaten us or offer us any opportunity to intervene and make a change in the way things are going. Listen. The white slave trade is real. It's a big business for the Jews. They enslave tens of thousands of our young women every year. It threatens all of us because it threatens our race. It is primarily Ukrainian and Polish and Russian girls who are being exploited and victimized by the Jews now. But it could just as well be Irish or Scottish or English or German or Norwegian girls, which is to say, it could just as well be American girls. In fact, it will be when the Jews manage to get our economy into the shape they've gotten the economy of Eastern Europe into. Unless, of course, we deal with the problem before then. But the longer we wait, the more difficult the problem will be. The Jews would like to have governments everywhere headed by corrupt men indebted to them, men like Bill Clinton and Boris Yeltsin. They would like to have the secret police forces of every nation headed by corrupt and ambitious men like Louis Freeh, who understand that the way to get ahead is to please the Jews. And they would like to have all of us trained to accept the idea of the United Nations sending a peacekeeping force into any country which gets out of line. That's the way they're headed now. And after they get there, it will be much more difficult to put an end to their exploitation of our women. It's a difficult task, even now, of course. With their control of the mass media, the Jews can keep the great masses of white people convinced that there is no such thing as white slavery, or that if there is, the Jews have nothing to do with it. And anyone who accuses the poor dears of running it is a wicked racist. An occasional revelation, such as the article in the January 11th New York Times and the other newspapers which get their national and international news from the New York Times wire service, doesn't affect the masses in the least. To make any impression on their consciousness, something needs to be repeated over and over again for months. It has to become a cliche in the mouths of their favorite sports stars and soap opera actors before it has any meaning for them. Goodness, in 1924, Adolf Hitler, in the second chapter of his book Mein Kampf, wrote about his observations of the Jewish domination of the white slave trade when he had been a struggling young artist in Vienna before the First World War. I quote, "The relationship of the Jews to prostitution and even more to the white slave trade could be studied in Vienna as perhaps in no other city of Western Europe, with the possible exception of the southern French ports. When for the first time I recognized the Jew as the cold-hearted, shameless, and calculating director of this revolting vice trade, a cold shudder ran down my back." End of quote. Actually, Hitler had more to say on this subject, but my point is that tens of millions of copies of his book have been sold during the past 73 years or so, including several million copies in the English language, without making the slightest impression on the average American. The average American still believes Steven Spielberg's version of events, namely, that the Jews in Europe were all nice, inoffensive people, and that Hitler had no reasonable basis for his determination to get them all off the backs of the German people and out of Germany. I'll tell you something even more amazing. The people of Eastern Europe, who suffered for decades under the yoke of Jewish communism, even now have not moved to rid themselves of the Jewish scourge, which continues to exploit them in a new guise. They saw tens of millions of their neighbors and relatives hauled off to slave labor camps never to return during the years when the Jews were the commissars. Then, when communism became an untenable enterprise and the commissars all switched hats and declared themselves Democrats, the people made no move against them. Jewish mass murderers like Lazar Kaganovich, the butcher of Ukraine, were permitted to retire quietly and live out their lives in comfort. Even today, Jews hold some of the most powerful positions in the governments of Poland and Russia. And of course, they hold the dominant position in the mass media, so they are able to run their white slave business without opposition from the people they are exploiting. Well, of course, the fact that the Polish and the Ukrainian and the Russian masses are as inert and as uncomprehending as Americans are is hardly an excuse for us. It just helps us to understand better the nature and magnitude of our task. Some of the people who write to me evidently feel that there is no hope of getting the Jews off our backs as long as they control the mass media, because the masses will be on their side rather than on ours. But let me tell you, there is hope, and there is a great deal that we can do now to free our people. I have a tendency on these broadcasts to report to you the more sensational things that are happening, the more shocking things, rather than the everyday things that the average American experiences regularly. I tell you about Bill Clinton's connections with convicted drug dealers and organized crime. I talk about some of the wackier excesses of political correctness at our colleges and universities. I report to you on some of the more laughable claims of the Black History propagandists, or the more outrageous goings-on in places like the black-ruled District of Columbia. I talk about the most dangerous consequences of globalizing the American economy. And I tell you about the Jewish control of the trade in white slaves, a subject which is as shocking and horrifying to us today as it was to Hitler 85 years ago. And I realize the difficulty that the average person has in coming to grips with all of this and making up his mind to do something about it. I must admit that dealing with all of this material myself, going through stacks of news reports every day and preparing my broadcasts, gives me a surrealist feeling. These are not reports about little problems which have cropped up in an otherwise sane and orderly world. They are reports about a world which is completely out of control, an insane and unreasonable world that it is sometimes difficult to relate to. Probably the most surreal thing about all of this is that the general population continues about its business as if nothing were amiss. People continue driving to work every day. They continue shopping in the supermarkets. They continue watching ball games on television. They continue putting money in the bank so that they'll be able to send their kids off to places like Harvard or Yale, which are at the very center of what's wrong with the world today. One might think of them as sleepwalkers, so tied up in their personal dreams that they are oblivious to what is really happening in the world around them. But you know, I talk with many of these ordinary Americans. I get letters and email from them. They are being affected by all of the craziness going on in the world. They may not have any knowledge of the details. They may not do any serious reading or pay much attention to the news. They may have their heads full of wrong ideas from the mass media. If you ask one of them, "Hey, what do you think about the fact that American taxpayers are being forced by their government to support the state of Israel, which is the hub of the world's trade in white slaves?" You'll just get a blank stare. He won't know what you're talking about. But nevertheless, he does sense at some level that the world is seriously out of kilter, and it worries him. I detect a real hunger for sanity and stability and normalcy. It almost can be described as a spiritual hunger, and no amount of Mr. Spielberg's Hollywood propaganda can quench this hunger. To the Jews and the sort of pseudo-sophisticates who run with them, the yuppies and others who think they're a lot smarter than they really are, it may be amusing or even titillating to read about the randy antics of the President of the United States as the Paula Jones trial approaches. But it's not amusing to the average American. It's deeply troubling. It may be that to many people raised on MTV, Roseanne, and Seinfeld, nothing is sacred. Everything is good for a laugh. But a good three-quarters of white Americans don't fit that mold. They have a moral sense which has been deeply offended by what the Jews have done to America, even though most of them don't understand that it's the Jews who have done it. Most Americans want to feel that they are living in a moral world where goodness is rewarded and evil is punished, a world that makes sense and has a purpose. And they can't find that feeling in themselves today. They don't know why they can't find it, but they sense that something is very badly wrong. If we could take one of these ordinary Americans, and make him thoroughly understand that every year tens of thousands of pretty but naive young girls, pretty young girls with dreams of a better life, gentle and sensitive young girls with dreams of finding a good husband and having children, are being rounded up in villages all across Eastern Europe by Jewish gangsters, some by deception with false offers of employment abroad, and some by simple kidnapping, and shipped off to be forced to work in brothels in Israel and Turkey and Thailand, to be beaten and gang raped and perhaps killed by their Jewish captors if they refuse. This average American would be horrified. He would be sickened and outraged. The Jews and the yuppie sophisticates don't understand this. To them, the article about the white slave trade in the January 11th New York Times is interesting, perhaps a little titillating, but certainly nothing to be outraged about. And it never occurs to them that most ordinary Americans won't react the way they do. That's why they occasionally make a terrible miscalculation and allow such news stories to be printed. And if we could take the same average American that we've gotten to understand what goes on in the white slave trade, and make him thoroughly understand that the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, accepts money from the Jewish gangsters who run the trade and does what they tell him to do, and our government takes more than $3 billion of our tax money and gives it to the country where many of these white slaves end up, a country in which buying and selling white Gentile women and raping them and forcing them into prostitution is perfectly legal. You would have an angry man on your hands, a very angry man. And if you could further prove to him that more than 70 years ago, Adolf Hitler had warned the German public about the white slave trade and had denounced its Jewish bosses and had expressed his determination to free his people from this evil, and that the American people then had been tricked into going to war against him and killing millions of Germans that we had been lied to when we were told by Jewish media bosses that Hitler was the most evil man alive and that he wanted to conquer and enslave America, and that we had been used by the Jews to destroy the one man who could have broken their power, and that as a result of our sacrifices and our criminal collaboration with the communists in the Second World War, the white slave trade about which Hitler had expressed his outrage so long ago was allowed to continue under the same management and is still flourishing today. If we could beat that into his head, you would have a man ready to begin killing the enemies of his people. But of course, we can't make the average American understand these things, not when he doesn't want to understand them and when the mass media are still in the hands of the Jews. But we don't really have to do that now. The Jews are doing it for us, albeit inadvertently. The sort of world they have created is doing it. The feeling the average American has that something is badly wrong with the world can only become worse, because the Jews can only continue to use their power to make the world more Jewish. The average American may not understand any more than he does now. He may not be more inclined to give up his bad habits. He may even continue for a while to parrot the same nonsense the Jews have taught him about equality and diversity and multiculturalism and all the rest. But inside, he will become sicker and sicker, more and more troubled, more and more disaffected, not because we tell him about the white slave trade, but because the sort of world in which such a trade can flourish eventually will sicken any normal person of our race. It's not just what the Jews are doing to all those naive young girls from Russia and Poland and Ukraine, of course, but a world in which that sort of thing is permitted is a world in which every other sort of evil also can grow. A world in which the politicians and bureaucrats know about the white slave trade and do nothing to stop it? Is a world in which Bill Clinton can be elected President of the United States? A world in which O.J. Simpson can be acquitted of murder? A world in which the U.S. government can kill more than 80 men, women, and children in a church and then claim that it was justified in what it did and none of its agents were at fault? It all hangs together. The slave trade in girls from Eastern Europe, the corrupt politicians and governments which tolerate the trade, the Jewish control of the media, the breakdown of order and decency everywhere. There's a common morality there, and it's not our morality. And the average American increasingly is sensing that, even if he isn't figuring out the details. And our task, what we can do now, is to continue to reveal and to explain and to help people make sense of things. The number of Americans who are ready to listen to sense may still be rather small, but what the Jews are doing is a guarantee that the number will grow and our work will grow accordingly. And you can help. Thanks for being with me again today.